Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Monday, October 26, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you all enjoyed your weekend. The title of today's podcast is Home Stretch Election 2020. 8 days to go. Really, with doing these podcasts in the evening, there's really 7 days left to go before Election Day, the 3rd of November. Thank God, I can't wait for this to be over, but November 3rd is probably not going to be the end of this, especially if it is a close election. This will end up in the courts if it is a close election, and who knows how long that could take to make its way through the courts to the Supreme Court and then for some sort of decision to be rendered. And of course, there's still that possibility, not a probability by any stretch, but there is a very, very slight possibility of an electoral college tie, 269 to 269, where the vote would go to the House to determine who would become the next president of the United States. I don't imagine that that's going to happen, but we did play that out as a potential scenario, and it could, but I'm not going to say that that is going to happen. Playing the probabilities in 2020 is, you know, maybe not the best thing anybody can do, but that's what I'm doing with respect to this election. And given how close we are to Election Day, given the amount of early voting that is taking place, and we're going to give an update on the early vote count as well, in addition to some Electoral College math scenarios, I'm giving it with the probabilities a nod to the Biden-Harris ticket. That's not to say that the president of the United States cannot win re-election. He most definitely can. But in my opinion, my analysis, I think he's going to have to pull another inside straight. And it's not just going to have to be any straight. I think it's going to have to be a royal flush to pull this off. That's in the cards. It can happen. And the president is campaigning like hell. He's all over the country, 3 stops today in Pennsylvania alone, because his campaign is fully aware that he needs to win Pennsylvania. He has to keep that in his column. And there are some scenarios where he can still win it and still lose, too, and we're going to get to that today. But he knows how important Pennsylvania is. With a lot of the polls that have been coming out and how consistent they have been, Michigan seems to be pretty strong in the Biden-Harris camp. Wisconsin is also pretty strong in the Biden-Harris camp, but to a lesser degree. And Pennsylvania is still somewhat of a toss-up, but of course is leaning towards the Biden ticket. Anything can happen between now and Election Day, but we got a lot of early votes, and again, we're going to get to that. Before we get to market performance and some of the updated vote counts, as I'm sure many of you are aware this evening, Judge Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed by the United States Senate with a vote of 52 to 48, confirming her as the next Associate Justice to the United States Supreme Court. The White House and the President held a swearing-in ceremony at the White House, and she was sworn in this evening by Associate Justice Clarence Thomas. I do believe there will be a more formal swearing-in ceremony with Chief Justice John Roberts. But nonetheless, the Republicans were able to pull this off, which, as long as they had the votes, they were going to be able to do it. You can call them hypocrites. I call them hypocrites. That's exactly what they are in this scenario. There was no reason why any of them had to open up their mouths 4 years ago about waiting for an election to take place before you can nominate and have another Supreme Court nominee and their respective vote and confirmation. But they did. That's not in the Constitution that you have to wait if it's in the middle of an election year. It's not in the Constitution. So the president has the ability and the duty to appoint somebody, and the Senate should take up that confirmation process. Doesn't mean they have to confirm them, but the process should be brought up, and it should make its way through one way or the other. So they're hypocrites, but they did nothing unconstitutional. They did nothing illegal. This is politics. This is why I am so against the two-party system. And again today, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republican Party in the Senate, brought that up. He said, well, is there anybody who has any doubt that if this was reversed, that the Democrats would do the same thing? I mean, that's the problem, Mitch. That's the problem with all you idiots. You're all talk. You're all hypocrites. That's why I'm sick and tired of it. I don't know why people endorse these guys. I don't know how you can vote for them. They are disgusting human beings. And again, I got 27 trillion pieces of evidence in my corner. What do you got? Nothing. You just like the guy. Not good enough. Because there's a cost to that. And it is very, very expensive, which we are all in the midst of finding out. And just wait till all of this cheap, funny, banana republic money printing that they have thrown into the system wears off, which it's already currently doing. Which is why you have central bankers and members of Congress. Oh, we got to do more. We got to spend more money that we don't have. This, the game's up, folks. It's in your face. The game is up. You got Coke and Pepsi. You got Red and Blue. You got Trump and Biden. You think these guys are going to make a difference? Give me a break. They're very much a part of the problem and endorse all of this insanity. But nonetheless, there are now 9 justices again on the U.S. Supreme Court. So this could get interesting if this is a close presidential election and it ends up in the courts. Of course, this will make its way to the Supreme Court pretty much immediately. And the chief question will become, will Justice Coney Barrett recuse herself or will she remain on the bench and have an opinion with respect to voting on the election outcome? So this can get very interesting if that scenario does play out. First is some market performance. A big down day across the board on Wall Street. Well, there's no stimulus deal, at least not for the time being. COVID-19 cases are surging around the world, specifically in Europe and here in the United States as well. And of course, the president wants to continue with his line that it's basically a hoax, COVID, that it's not going to exist on November 4th, basically saying that this is a conspiracy, a global conspiracy, because this is a global pandemic, against him. And the day after the election, it's all just going to magically go away. Well, he's been saying for months that it's going to magically go away, and that just hasn't been the case, has it? And he once again wants to insult your intelligence in saying that the reason we have so many cases is because we're testing. That's ludicrous. If you're sick, you're sick. If you have it, you have it. The testing just confirms it, so we know how to count it, how to treat it, how to trace it. I mean, pick your poison as to what you want to say. Say, well, there's no pollution in the ocean because we haven't tested for it. We haven't sent anybody out there to look for it, so clearly it doesn't exist. That's what he is trying to make is his argument. If we don't look for it, if we don't test for it, well, then nobody has it. There's no plastic bags in the ocean because we didn't look for it. That's ridiculous. It's an insult to your intelligence. This is because he has no argument. This is because he wants to continuously say that he's done all that he could do, which is just patently false. It's not even close to being true. If this country took it more seriously from the get-go, we could have many fewer cases and many fewer deaths. But the president wanted to downplay it, and this is what we have. So there is a different dynamic at play in 2016. So no stimulus deal, so no more drugs for the drug addicts on Wall Street, causing a sell-off. At least that's part of the headline. And then the rising cases for COVID-19. And it's not just the cases. It's the hospitalizations, too, unfortunately, which has really been the linchpin for me of this entire time. Check the tape going back the beginning of this year when we started talking about it. Yes, the deaths are important. And yes, that's what's going to make the headlines. But I said it's more than that. This is a new virus. Nobody has really any expertise on this. And one of the biggest concerns is the overwhelming and overrunning of our healthcare facilities. Because if our doctors and nurses get sick, and they either get sick and they're unable to work, or, you know, worst case scenario, they pass away, well, then how is anybody going to take care of anybody? And then this obviously has downstream effects with how it affects the economy too, which we are still in the midst of. Now, I am not an advocate for shutting things down, but I am an advocate for taking a deep breath, not going hyperbolic, not going crazy about wearing a mask and socially distancing. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that we're in a pandemic, but you got to do what you got to do. People don't like being drafted for war, but people do what they got to do. I don't like having $27 trillion in debt, but we have it, don't we? So get off your pity pot and do what you got to do for the time being. It's really not that big of a sacrifice, because if that's the hill you want to die on, I mean, my goodness, to me, it's small-minded in the grand scheme of things, because nobody wants to talk about the structural issues, about this money printing, how they're running away with all of our money. They're just printing it and taking it. This is a huge wealth transfer. The impending inflation that is coming, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. A lot of it's already here. The taxation, and your taxes are going up, make no mistake about it. I don't care what Thunder Thumbs tweets or says, your taxes are going up. I don't care what Joe Biden says, your taxes are going up. How do you think all of these states and the federal government is going to make up for all of these shortfalls? Now, the federal government has a printing press, but that's inflationary, which is the most destructive form of taxation. States don't have a printing press, so they're going to have to raise your taxes. They're going to lay people off, and they're going to cut benefits. It's going to be all of the above, and it's still not going to be enough. And this isn't a question of a red state or a blue state. It's across the entire board. Go do a little digging with respect to the pension crisis. It doesn't matter if it's a red state or a blue state. Most of these pension plans are completely underfunded, and you ain't even going to come close to making good on these promises. So just wait till that reality sets in, because that's still getting kicked down the road as well. But to market performance, we have the dollar on the back of this sell-off gaining a little bit today. I guess still somewhat of a flight to safety. Best-looking girl at the dance, if you will. Nonetheless, slightly down right now during this podcast, trading at 92 spot 98. It was trading with that 93 handle early, but it is right around at 92 spot 98. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost about 650 points for the day at the close. It was down further, 900 and some points at its lowest. But of course, you have the White House lackeys and other press communications teams coming out and saying, oh, well, there's going to be a vaccine or some therapeutic, or, you know, they're going to continue to talk on the stimulus talks. So don't worry too much. And I guess that had a little bit of an effect at the end of the day. Nonetheless, in overnight futures trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up about 0.1%. The S&P 500 is up about 0.25%. And the NASDAQ 100 is down about 1.5%. Japanese cash trade is down 0.4%. A big sell-off across the pond in Europe, again, off of the lack of a stimulus deal here in the United States, surging cases of COVID-19, further lockdowns or other restrictions, and some poor economic data coming out of Germany, the largest economy out of Europe. UK markets gave back 1%. The German markets gave back 3.7%. We are now trading at 12,177 on the DAX. The German exchange hasn't been that low in 4 months, so just got decimated today. The French markets were down about 2 percentage points for the day. The Italian markets gave back 1.8, and the Spanish markets, to round it out, in Europe gave back 1.4. Also in cash trade right now, in Australia, giving back 2 percentage points. So this sell-off is across the board, across the world, and we will continue to monitor this going into the rest of this week. This is the home stretch. The president uses the stock market as his barometer for success. If you have COVID-19 cases going up, if you have hospitalizations going up, even in the state of Utah, I'm hearing that they are getting concerned with having their ICU beds at full capacity and might have to come up with makeshift hospitals, which is what they have done in other countries or in other states. I think Wisconsin is one of them. And I think, again, in some parts of Texas, I think around El Paso is a hot spot. So they got some more makeshift hospitals. So if Donald Trump wants to claim that the stock market is his barometer for success and it's selling off the week going into the election, that's not going to bode well for Mr. Trump and company. And if he wants to claim that the United States is turning the corner with respect to COVID-19 and cases are going up, but not just cases, but more importantly, hospitalizations and deaths, which lag those hospitalizations, unfortunately, well, that's strike two. So that is not going to look well for the president and his team with a week left to go, especially for those who might still be undecided, on the fence, what have you. And as we know through a lot of the polling, especially at this time, with only a week left to go, there are not that many Americans left who are undecided at this juncture. So those are just a couple things to be mindful of. And as I have been criticizing this president for quite a while now about how he has hooked himself to the stock market, I think you really have to be pretty stupid to do that, because it's such a volatile environment to begin with. It's not the role of the president to play a large part within the stock market. It's not the role of the president to play a large part within how the economy functions in the day-to-day. That's just not what it is. And unfortunately, we have put too much weight and have given the president too much power in this country, where we think that the president is the panacea, that he is the cure-all. And that's just not the case. And that's not how the presidency is supposed to be viewed in our constitutional republic. Not even close. What people are basically calling for when they think Obama's going to do it or Trump's going to do it or whatever is they want a dictator. That's what you're really calling for. That they can just go in, screw Congress, screw the court system, that it's just the president. He has this idea, they have that idea, and that's it. That there are no hurdles, there's no checks and balances, just go vote for the president, and that's it. That's not how our system works. And thank God, that's not how our system works. And we got to get back to it. We have to restore our constitutional republic. But we're not. We're not. We continue to go down the wrong path, unfortunately. Crude oil took a huge hit. We have WTI back below $40. In fact, it's at $38.70 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is at $40.60 a barrel. Natural gas is still with that three handle, $3.04. Gold and silver. Gold was, okay. A little wishy-washy today, but not too bad. Silver gave back 1%, but both right now in overnight trading are up. Gold spot is at $1,908 an ounce. Silver spot is at $24.49. Now, the fact that we saw this type of sell-off, about 2.5%, especially with respect to the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's one thing to see gold kind of remain steady, not having any big sell-off or anything like that. But silver, like I said, it did sell off about a percentage point today. But you would think, given the more volatile nature with respect to silver, that you would have seen a bigger drop-off and maybe a continuation thereof right now. So the fact that silver really didn't sell off that significantly and is currently trading up, to me, that's some pretty positive news for the metals. But we saw more of a safe haven flight, if you will, into the U.S. dollar and into the Treasury market, where we have yields back down right at spot 80.8% is the yield on Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note. So a little bit of a flight to safety, I guess, back into the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury market. We'll see how long-lived this lasts. This could just be a one-day event. Who knows what type of headline we're going to get at 2, 3 in the morning? Who knows what we're going to get before the markets start in the U.S.? It's anybody's guess, but that's what we are dealing with a week before Election Day. Now, let's see here. Let's get first to the vote tally. Let's go to that first. So, early voting. As of right now, again, this data is from the Election Project out of the University of Florida. 64.2 million early votes have been cast. 64.2 million. Mail ballots account for 43.2 million. In-person votes accounts for 21 million. So again, that grand total of early votes is 64.2 million. That is huge. As a percent of turnout for 2016, 46.6%. So we're already basically halfway there. We will cross that 50% mark tomorrow. No doubt about it in my mind. As more mail-in ballots come in, as more people take to lining up outside their polling places across the country in early voting. And with respect to what some of the political analysts are projecting for total turnout This year, we're talking 150 to 160 million votes potentially. That would compare to about 137 million votes in 2016. So quite the increase. But nonetheless, with that being said, we could still end up with more than 50% of the total vote this year taking place in early voting. And it could be even more than that. So the higher that number goes, the early vote number is, in my opinion, and I don't think this is any stretch of the imagination, it increases the likelihood that we will know who the next president is, maybe not on election night of November 3rd, but November 4th, November 5th, we're going to have a pretty good idea as to who the next president of the United States is going to be. So we will continue to monitor this on a daily basis for the remainder of the week. Now, some things, again, playing the probabilities that we might even know or have a pretty good shot of understanding who wins on election night is Florida. If we look at Florida, and if Florida goes into the Biden camp, that really decimates Donald Trump, really takes a lot of the wind out of his sails. Again, if Joe Biden should win Florida. In Florida, it is likely that we will actually have some results out of the state of Florida on election night. So if Biden wins, he's pretty much the next president of the United States. If Donald Trump wins Florida again, as he did in 2016, then it's going to be a long night, or more likely going to be a long night, because that opens up an avenue, a couple avenues for the president. And he really only has a couple avenues to victory. Because, and excuse the clicking if you hear it over the microphone, but I'm just updating some of my Electoral College map here just to give you an idea as to the uphill battle that Donald Trump has over this week. So if you're looking at an Electoral College map and you say, okay, Joe Biden wins Minnesota, that's a pretty reasonable assumption. Joe Biden wins Wisconsin, which is also a pretty reasonable assumption. Joe Biden wins Michigan, again, another reasonable assumption given the polls. Nevada, Hillary Clinton won it. Joe Biden's still up in the polls, so give him Nevada. Now, say Joe Biden flips Arizona, all right, because we have a senatorial race with astronaut Mark Kelly running against the incumbent Republican. She was not elected, Martha McSally, but she was appointed. So that race has been stable, and it has been Kelly's to lose. So he's up. So I am giving Joe Biden Arizona. He also has a slight lead himself in the polls. So with that said, giving him Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, Joe Biden has 269 Electoral College votes. He needs one more to 270 to clinch it. Well, all he would need is one of those extra districts out of Nebraska or Maine, and he's the president of the United States. What that means, ladies and gentlemen, with the point I'm trying to get across to you, is Joe Biden can lose Iowa, which Donald Trump won. However, Obama and Biden won Iowa in 2008 and in 2012. Donald Trump can win Texas. He can win Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and Joe Biden would still be the president of the United States. That's how steep an incline the president has to climb in order to regain the White House. Can it be done? Yes, it can. Yes, it can. But if you just give Biden Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, that's all she wrote. If he flips Iowa, again, now he's just banking, he's putting more into the bank, and it's just making it that much more difficult for Donald Trump and company. That's why Florida is so crucial. That's why Donald Trump is spending so much time in Pennsylvania. And Joe Biden, I think, got the memo, because there really wasn't anything on the books today for as far as his schedule was concerned to campaign much of anywhere else other than Delaware. Well, he showed up in Pennsylvania today as well, because he has to be out there. He has to. If he doesn't want the big rallies, that's fine. I can understand that. He can wants to differentiate himself, says we don't want these super spreader events, yada, 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 whatever. He can have his parking lot rallies with the people in the cars and the trucks and honking their horns. I don't care. I don't like these people. I don't care, but I'm just saying. He needs to be out there. You can't have Trump running all over the country and then just say, well, I'm just going to stay in Delaware. I'll do some things on Skype or Zoom or whatever. You have to be out there in some form. So Joe Biden made an unscheduled stop in Pennsylvania, you know, just across the border from Delaware. But that was beneficial. He will be traveling. Joe Biden will be traveling across the country, as well as is Kamala Harris, as is Donald Trump, as is Mike Pence, which is all to be expected. So anybody's race, but an uphill climb for Donald Trump. No ifs, ands, or buts about it as far as I'm concerned. 2020 and Joe Biden is not 2016 and is not Hillary Clinton. We've been through this before. Donald Trump was the outsider. He was the businessman. He didn't have a track record in how he would govern on his policies, his temperament, his rhetoric, any of that. You really didn't have a track record of how he was going to behave as president or as a politician, because he wasn't a politician. He was a businessman. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both were two of the most unpopular presidential candidates, I think, ever, but most definitely in modern history. You know, you want to hold up the morality and the ethics of Donald Trump. Well, you say, well, who was he running against? Hillary Clinton and her husband, Bill Clinton. So you say, well, I mean, yeah, Trump did X, Y, Z, but so did Hillary and so did Bill. So that's sort of just negating each other. Just okay, now we're on an even playing field. The country was fed up with the status quo because of the anemic growth that took place during the Obama-Biden administration. And that same anemic growth continued through the Trump-Pence administration. Donald Trump is just the better marketer. He just wants to take credit for everything. You know, the Obama-Biden administration cut those deficits in half from what they inherited with the great financial crisis. Doesn't mean they had to continue with those policies, and we've discussed that many times before. But nonetheless, they cut the deficits in half. Donald Trump and company, oh, let's go to another trillion. And now they're just running roughshod over everybody. So that's foregone conclusion that you can't even hold a candle to that comparison. Same thing with respect to the number of jobs that were created during the last 3 years of the Obama-Biden administration with respect to the first 3 years of the Trump-Pence administration. And that excludes COVID-19. It was a higher number for the Obama-Biden administration. So Trump is just somebody who always claims whatever he does, whatever he's doing is the best. And that sticks with a lot of people. It resonates with a lot of people. A lot of people don't want to do the homework to look into the numbers. That's what I'm here for. And that's why we've been saying since we started this podcast in 2019, the business cycle was coming to an end before COVID-19. Buckle up, and here we are. Okay? So you have nothing but tape to go back to and listen to this podcast. One item after the next, rolling over, showing cause for concern, and that's what I was doing to educate this audience on those topics. All right? So there isn't going to be any miraculous V-shaped recovery with this economy. There's not going to be a miraculous removal of COVID-19 all of a sudden, although we all hope that would be the case, but we have to be adults. We have to be realistic here. So 2020 and Joe Biden is not 2016 and Hillary Clinton, as much as Trump and his surrogates and his campaign would like it to be. That's why they're pulling out the same arguments, trying to pull out the same stunts. And a lot of this just is not sticking like it did to Hillary Clinton. And the reason is because Joe Biden is not Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump has a track record. Some people might like it. Some people might not. A lot of Republicans voted for Donald Trump, obviously, in 2016. A lot of Democrats crossed the line and voted for Donald Trump. A lot of independents gave Donald Trump a chance. The question is, what are they going to do now? Are they going to say, yes, we want 4 more years of this? Or are the Democrats going to go home? Well, with respect to the state of Wisconsin or with Michigan, it really looks like those Democrats went back to being Democrats and are going to vote for Joe Biden. Same kind of deal with Wisconsin, but really with respect to Michigan. That's what it comes down to. This is a referendum on Donald Trump. He has his base. He could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and they're still going to vote for him. They're not going anywhere. Doesn't matter. And it's because there's such an emotional connection with him. To me, at this juncture, it's beyond ridiculous to have such an emotional connection with him, but people still do because they project onto Donald Trump what they want. They want the outsider. You know, with Hillary Clinton's remark of the deplorables, that really sealed her fate. You know, that was it. Because a lot of people on the outside, the forgotten men and women, they said, you know, they view themselves as second-class citizens from the perspective of how the elites, how the Hillary Clintons of the world view them. And her saying that they're deplorables just confirmed that. Donald Trump was like, you're not deplorables, you're my people. We're all Americans here. That resonates. That resonates. And people, because of all of the economic and political and social strife that has been taking place, the hardship that exists, people are looking for hope. They're looking for somebody to stand up to that establishment that has caused a lot of these issues. That was Donald Trump in 2016. And it remains Donald Trump to a large portion of this country, which is why he can still win re-election. I just think playing the probabilities this time, it's much less likely going to happen. Again, I voted for Donald Trump in 2016. I was not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Give the guy a chance. Let's see what he can do. I really don't like what he has done, especially with his rhetoric. You know, the blue states, the red states, this country is divided as it is. It's the responsibility and obligation of a leader, especially the President of the United States, to do everything within his or her power to unite the country. He just continues to fan the flames, which is disqualifying as far as I'm concerned. And if you think this is going to get better, I think you're greatly mistaken. It's likely going to get worse because he's going to feel vindicated should he win, because those were the actions that got him elected. So why would he all of a sudden switch? He's had 4 years to switch and to rise above it, and he has not. So I don't think with winning re-election, he will all of a sudden change his stripes, change his spots. But we got a week to go. We will continue to keep you updated on those vote counts, and we'll continue to keep you updated with the market performance and all of those shenanigans. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.